previously on Breakfast with Martin Bester. Wake
up, give it up. Helen Ziller, what a pleasure. Thank you very much for coming in. How are you?
So, Martin, you've got one of those non-holiday liking people sitting right opposite to you.
No.
Yeah, I get edgy on holiday.
Are you serious?
Yeah, my kids always take bets with each other as to how long I'll survive on holiday.
It's work, work, work.
Well, you know, I just need to be doing something productive. That's just in my genes, I suppose. I was born that way.
But there must be something that distracts you, though. Is it movies, music?
No, my grandchildren.
Oh, okay. Ah, yeah.
Yeah. That's the best. Right. I mean, I don't like playing games, board games, card games. They seem so pointless to me. And ever since I've had grandchildren, I can't wait to get there and play games with them.
Aww.
What kind of board game would you not play with Helen Ziller?
Scrabble.
It's probably a good choice.
Yeah, I'll go Scrabble.
With a politician, Monopoly. I ain't playing Monopoly with a politician.
There's incredible different kinds of Monopoly now. There's Monopoly Deal.
Oh, really?
That you play without a board. Oh, my goodness. My grandkids teach me so many games.
Yeah.
And they beat me always. And when they don't beat me, they don't like it too much, so it's very useful for me to teach them that you've got to learn to lose in life as well.
A teachable moment.
Yeah, lots of those.
So your family is good?
Oh, my family's good, very good, yeah.
Otherwise, how's the coalition?
Which
Sorry,
one?
I should have moved on that segue.
Yes.
Which one, Martin? Which coalition? Yeah. Depends.
Yeah, no, listen, lots to talk about. Mayor of Johannesburg. I mean, you're no stranger to Johannesburg. You were born in Hillbrow, spent many of your early years. How many years have you spent here?
I was, let me work this out. I was 32 when I moved to Cape Town.
Sure. So okay.
Yeah, significant amount of time.
Dual passport.
yes. I actually earned the right to have Cape Town citizenship probably a few months ago. But now I'm coming back to Joburg.
You know, when you start your life as a journalist, politician, I guess, someone who joins the liberation movement or two in Johannesburg, kind of Johannesburg probably puts you more in touch with all of that. That's why it'll always be an important city to Johannesburg and South Africa historically, right?
Mm. Now, there's so many great people all over the world who have their roots here,
yeah,
and who still love this place. There's something about Josie. When I come back here, I just feel yes, this is home.
Mm.
I think many South Africans abroad who live abroad, when they come and touch the soil here, they think this is home. And I don't think they ever settle abroad. That's why I've never, ever thought of leaving. And that's why my children are here and my grandchildren are here. And that's why I do the work I do, because I want my grandchildren and everybody else's grandchildren to have a future here. That's the point.
Johannesburg, back in the 80s, 70s, even before that, obviously must have stories to tell. I mean, we read about it.
Huge
Some of us
stories.
That weren't around at the time of legends that walked, you know, this place.
Absolutely. And I think it was, like you said, it was an epicenter of a movement that was taking over and became international headlines as well. Mm-hmm. Music wise, politically wise, all that kind of thing. There was an energy here in Johannesburg that is still here.
And the big names, yes, as you said, the people who've come from here. Who do you miss the most?
I think probably Johnny Clegg. He didn't actually start in Johannesburg. Mm. He started in Durban.
Yeah.
But from the past, the person who made me transition into another consciousness in many ways was Johnny Clegg.
Hmm.
He showed us that you can transition cultures and you can do that comfortably. And you can be accepted in doing so. Now today, of course, it's called cultural appropriation and everyone shakes their head and says you can't do it. Everything that was progressive and good in those days is seen as regressive and racist today, which I think is an unbelievable pity.
Mm.
Because the only way we're going to make it as a country is by being able to cross boundaries and not being told we are culturally appropriating or being racist when we do so. Mm. So, you know, I like the fact that in those times, everyone was reaching out to each other. And in these times, everyone is trying to put themselves behind the barrier of some race or ethnic group or some gender-based group because your identity is not who you are anymore, but it's what you are. And back then, your identity was who you were. And you could really relate to other people, and it was never a thing. Non-racialism was progressive.
Yeah.
And today, so many people believe that non-racialism is regressive, and I don't go with that. And that's probably the thing I miss most from the past, and especially Johannesburg. Johannesburg pioneered a lot of that.
Sure, I mean, Hillbrow in those days.
Which is exactly what I'm thinking. Yeah,
but I lived in Berea when I was a journalist.
Yeah,
and Yeovil and Rocky Street.
Yeah.
Oh
yeah.
My goodness! When you drive through it now, I mean, Rocky Street was one of the first really non-racial inclusive hangouts, and everyone went there. And we all had a jaw, and it was real melting pot of South Africa. I don't know whether you can walk down Rocky Street anymore.
Do you grew up in Joburg. Do you still find it like that?
I lived
there.
Did you find it like that?
Still.
Back then.
So I remember as a teenager spending time in Rocky Street.
Okay.
And it was absolutely that. It was a wonderful place where everybody came together, went to Bar Peter, and, you know, had a wonderful time there. I had family who grew up and lived in Hillbrow. I lived very close to Hillbrow as well.
I lived in the Oval, yeah.
Yeah. So there's a lot of that, but the changes that have happened now are significant. You know, I tell my kids these things. Going to, what's that wonderful park that you even said that you went camping in?
Ubad Park.
And I remember walking through there, going through, looking at the artwork and all that kind of stuff as a teenager. Now, I'm not going to tell my kids, hey, go and, you know, take a walk through Ubad Park. Go and have a walk through Hillbrow.
I still live 3 kilometers away from Rocky Street. And I do drive through, and I still have friends who live in Yeovil. And when I first moved to Johannesburg, I lived in Fortescue, just around the road from Rocky Street. So that's really, really, really my hood. It has changed, but it's changed in terms of the nationality of the people that you see on the streets, maybe more than anything else. That's what sticks out at me. Definitely a lack of maintenance, especially when you look at things like roads, infrastructure. It's huge at the moment, but it does have moments and shoots and little
green
bits
shoots.
Of the culture that has survived, that has lived over these past 20 years. It's a phenomenal place, but it needs love.
It needs a lot of love. And it also, we need to get away from this notion that certain hoods are owned by certain nationalities. It really is very corrosive and very dangerous. So that's apparently the situation in Hillbrow and Yeovil and some parts of Berea too now, where this is where the Nigerians stay and this is where the Zimbabweans stay. What? Where does that come from?
I think in the past we used to welcome the multiculturalism of a place like Yeovil. You used to, the only African restaurant you could find in the 90s was Fair Ease.
Yes. Was in Yeovil. Yeah.
Was in Yeovil. So there's something frictionless that I think has taken place in the last little
bit. It really worked. Now, obviously, we've got a huge, huge problem with illegal immigrants, and that problem has to be tackled. There's no question about it. And part of fixing the inner city is to deal with that. We cannot have, no country in the world allows people who are not entitled to be in that country legally to be in that country, let alone to take over whole neighborhoods and keep other people out. So we can't accept that. But I just remember in those heady days where we were building a new society from the bottom up. That's what I miss.
Can you tell we're passionate about Joburg? We have so much to talk about. Helen Ziller, our guest on the show this morning. I promised you that you get to ask her questions. As always, you know this about us, right? 084-850-0942, our WhatsApp number. 19-7, meer op pad met Helen Ziller, ons gas op die show volgend. Our special guest on the show this morning is Helen Ziller, putting up a hand to run for mayor in Johannesburg. Elections on next year. You know, when you say things, what you said just now, we live in a time where, this is my opinion, we live in a time where people don't ask intention anymore. If you say something or the reason behind it, like you were talking about cultural misappropriation just now, and giving your opinion about it. We've gone through a time, I think it's like the cancellation period or trend, if you will, where if you express your opinion about something, we forget to ask why or what is your intention, why are you doing it? Verstaan jy? Like, if someone had to dress according to my culture, I'd probably ask, where are you going? Is it a theme party? Or do you want to know more about my culture? Whatever the case, I'm not going to cancel you outright.
Got you.
But that's just me.
Okay.
When you say something like that, some things like that as a politician, people really and truly take offense. A lot of them take offense. But the one thing I've learned about you, and the one thing I appreciate about you, and the one thing I've always asked, wanted to ask you is, if you don't subscribe to cancel culture, you don't get cancelled.
No, I've been cancelled a couple of times. I've written a whole book about it. But I don't bend the knee to cancel culture. I say what I believe is true. And if people don't like it, they must get over themselves. We live in a country that has freedom of speech. I never say anything deliberately to be nasty or mean to anybody. Unless they come at me, I will give them as good as I get, believe me. But I always try to be decent to other people. And there are a whole lot of people walking this earth who spend a lot of time looking for reasons to be offended. So when they are offended, they can get a lot of attention and people can tell them that's not so bad. And they put themselves at the center of the story. And the person who offended them didn't mean to offend them at all. They just meant to be pleasant, and they said something that somehow triggered them. That word triggers me, I can tell you, because people are triggered over the slightest little thing, and it really gets to me. So I remember once when I was in the area that used to be Bophuthatswana, and I was still leader of the DA, and I had to do a lot of canvassing and work there, and I went along, and we were going to see some chiefs, and my colleague said, you have to cover your head and your hair, because that is respectful in our culture. So when I'm in Rome, I do as the Romans do. When I'm in a culture that requires you to cover your head, I don't make a big fuss of it. I just cover my head. And I had a lekker duk. They made me one of those old-fashioned duks. Those fantastic. I looked fabulous. And they took some photographs of me going in there. The outcry on social media, cultural appropriation, how dare you do this? Meanwhile, for me, I was just trying to show respect. But they say this is cultural appropriation. Oh, terrible, the worst thing I could do. Now, you know, I don't have many options in that circumstance, but it was a sign of respect, not a sign of insult.
Context and does matter.
Context. Mm. That's the first thing you have to understand about cancel culture. They completely ignore the context. So if you say something in one context that could be made to sound bad if you intentionally wanted to give it the worst possible interpretation, that is how they interpret it. How it could be interpreted with the worst possible intention behind it. Meanwhile, you meant nothing of the sort. And there are a lot of people, because people, victimhood is valorization, is status these days. You've got to have been knocked down by somebody's insensitive remark and be triggered for the whole day. And then you can be the center of attention and all of that sort of thing. I don't go with that. I was raised by parents who said nobody likes a victim, not even other victims, and you're never a victim. And you stand up and you say your piece politely. You listen to others, which I always do. But people mustn't read things into what you say that was never there. And if you don't know that you've unintentionally stepped on a beehive, people can politely say to you, that's an insulting term, or that. If you say something deliberately with an insulting term to people, then they've got the right to give you everything they've got.
I mentioned the C word, the coalition word earlier, DA, ANC.
Now that triggers me.
I know.
The C word.
Sorry, but here's the context. What is the, and that's an unfair question because you can probably unpack it in hours and hours, but how healthy is it at the moment?
Well, it depends which coalition you're talking about. So if you're talking about coalitions where the DA is in government,
yes,
that is not Tshwane and it's not Johannesburg.
No.
Because that's where all the tiny little parties went with the EFF and MK. And the fact that people split their vote over so many small parties has resulted in the kind of instability you've got in most coalitions. So where the DA is comfortably the biggest party but didn't get 50%, there we put together stable coalitions. And across the Western Cape, we've got many stable coalitions. Where there are lots of tiny parties, inevitably the coalition is unstable.
Unstable.
Mm, absolutely.
Would you count Joburg as that?
Well, I would count Joburg as a marriage of convenience by parties that are well known for their corruption, and they all ensure that each of them has a looting channel, and they leave each other alone by and large, as long as they can extract.
The reason I'm asking about the coalition is because us mere mortals, you know, we pick up on things that politicians say, and even the president says, and it's confusing. The president came out and he said, look at the DA if you want to see well-run. What is paraphrasing it.
If you want to see models of decent government, look at the DA, basically.
And the rest of us were like, we don't understand what's happening now. And now, probably a couple of days ago, he backpedaled a bit. I mean, obviously, people on his side must have said, you can't say that.
Mm. Well, what he's trying to do is damage control. I mean, it's very interesting that both the president and the deputy president have houses where the DA governs, because they know they'll get their services, they know their rubbish will be removed, and both are very substantial ratepayers of the city of Cape Town. So the president was being honest. He was talking to his councillors. He was saying, you've got to up your game, guys. You know, Gwede Mantashe started that meeting by saying, you sing very nicely, but capacity, dololo, which for some of your listeners may not know what that means, and I'm not culturally appropriating anything, but dololo means zilch, nothing. So capacity dololo, and he started off by saying that, and then they got a bit grumpy, obviously, that triggered them, but it's the truth. But then the ANC's to blame for that, because they haven't got a proper merit-based selection system. If you haven't got a proper system that opens the door to talent, you're going to end up with talent being kept out deliberately, and you'll end up governing badly. That's just the consequence. So if they want to know why capacity dololo, the ANC must hold a mirror to itself and say, are our systems throwing up the most talented people there are? And the answer would be definitely not. Then Cyril got up there and said, listen, we've got to actually start focusing on governing, not on fighting for how we get access to this tender and that particular job for our pals or for ourselves. And then he said, look at the way the DA governs. It's a lot better than anything that we do. And he was being truthful. But politically, it was a disaster for him, because now we've got the best possible frame for an election, which is the leader of our major opposition party says that we govern better. So, you know, game, set and match. And of course, his own councillors went for him like anything. And then he had to do damage control. So he now goes everywhere spreading the lie that the DA spends more on the suburbs than we do on the townships. That is the exact opposite of the truth. I mean, in Cape Town, we are spending in the next 3 years 30 billion rand on new infrastructure. 30 billion rand on new infrastructure. And 75% is going to invest in roads, stormwater, sewerage, water, electricity reticulation in the poorest areas of the city. That's what it is, and that's the truth. And that is the city's job.
We've got to talk about the city of Johannesburg coming up for sure. We have to get to your questions, I promised you. There are a lot of questions, so we're going to move through that. Helen Ziller, our very special guest on the show this morning, you are very welcome to agree, disagree, ask questions. 084 850 0942. It's all live. So our special guest on the show this morning is Helen Ziller, running for mayorship next year. This all goes down. Johannesburg is such an important city, but it does feel to me that it's just been abused.
Yes.
Been all over the place. So many mayors in such a short space of time. Has it become a political chess piece? What is happening? Our poor Joburg.
Well, I have to talk very plainly here, and many people don't like it when I do, but the truth in a democracy is that people get the government they voted for. And so, if people vote for parties, tiny little splinter parties across the board, and you need to put together a 9-party coalition, as Mpho Palatse did when she was the DA's mayor for a short while, then there is no chance that you're going to govern it successfully. Let me explain why. Many people don't understand this concept of coalitions. What does it even mean? Why do you need a coalition? Well, in the Johannesburg City Council, there are 270 seats. Mm-hmm. And to be able to get things through the vote, you need to have 135 at least, or 136, if I do my maths correctly. That gets you just over 50% to pass a budget, to pass bylaws, and to pass motions and everything else you do in a council. So the magic number is to get to 136 seats. Now, the big challenge is that when you have lots of parties on the ballot paper, people split their vote all over the place, and then no party gets near to the magic number. Mm. And then you have to put together coalitions to take you over 135. And sometimes you need 9 parties to do that. And each of those parties can pull out and take you below 135. So they put their demands on the table, which has often got nothing to do with policy, nothing to do with principle, everything to do with themselves and their own self-enrichment. And if you draw the line and say, we're not going to allow this because this is corruption or this isn't how we do things, then they say, bye-bye, we're going to the other side, and they bring down the government. And so you can't keep it stable unless you've got a really strong base party as your major coalition party, and then some good other parties if you need to get over 50% that can come in with you. We had 7 parties that were needed to make almost 50% in Cape Town. We made that work. But in Johannesburg, the votes were split all over the place. Also, people don't realize that when you go to vote in a local government election, as the one next year will be, you get 2 votes. And all those votes are added together to get your proportion of the votes. So if people say, well, I live in a safe DA seat, let's say, my council is going to get re-elected, so I don't have to worry. They stay away from the polls. They cost us 2 votes, and proportionately, we drop very badly in the final tally. In the last election, DA supporters who didn't bother to go out to vote in DA wards because they thought their councillor would automatically be elected cost us 35 proportional representation seats. 35. Mm. So to get people to go and vote and to get people to understand what their vote means and that every vote adds to the proportion of votes you get in the end, which determines the proportion of seats that you get, is a complicated thing. Mm. And people need to go and vote. And if they don't want the mess they have in Joburg or Tshwane, then they must consolidate their vote behind the party that is best able to fix things and best able to govern. It's not hard.
So these multi-party coalitions have hurt Johannesburg.
Desperately.
When I'm listening to you, do you think Dada Marrero is realizing that now too?
Yes, I have no doubt that he is.
Do you know him?
I've met him a couple of times. I've had discussions with him.
So does this make a mayor look bad?
Well, of course it makes his party look bad. Yeah. It makes the mayor look bad. You know, everybody's very quick to blame the politicians rather than interrogate the way they voted. Because the politicians that are there are a consequence of the way people vote. We don't select ourselves.
Sure.
So the DA has a very strong merit-based selection system. They put the candidates up there and they say, well, these are the best candidates we can find for you to vote for. Then people must make their minds up.
So what we're saying, and I know this is a tough one for you to answer because you are DA and not ANC, but if Dada Marrero had better coalition partners, do you think he would have given it a better go?
Well, first of all, he needed a better party. Because if you look inside the ANC, that's probably a 10-party coalition right there inside the ANC. There's so many factions. And when a party like that is shrinking, the battles become much more intense because everybody's falling over each other to get to power to dispense patronage. So his biggest problem is holding together his own party and surviving the battles in his own party, because I know that he and Lesufi, the premier, don't sit around the same fire at all.
Oh, really?
So that's his first problem. Then his second problem is sitting with all these tiny parties who can cross the floor. I mean, look at the Al Jamal. They had 2 mayors, Kabelo Kwamanda and Tapelo Ahmad. They have only 3 seats out of 270 in the Joburg Council. Yet because they had the balance of power, and because if they walked out, they would bring down the government, and because the EFF would not vote for an ANC mayor and said they would only vote for a mayor of the smaller party and not boost the ANC in that coalition, they ended up with a party getting the mayorship who couldn't get 2% of the vote. Now, that is the craziness of splitting your vote. That's why we have bills before Parliament right now to introduce thresholds, as they do in every single functional proportional representation system worldwide, to say you've got to get a decent percentage of the vote, say at least 2 or 5%, before you can actually have seats in the council.
Show up. Johannesburg. In how much trouble is Johannesburg?
Deep trouble.
I hear politicians like yourself say that, but break it down for me. Very, very short, very simple to understand.
Well, the first thing is that Johannesburg has a budget of 89 billion rand.
Okay.
That's a lot.
Compared to Cape Town,
Look, I haven't got
Durban.
The figure on Cape Town exactly on hand, but it's the biggest metro budget in the country.
It must be sizably more.
It's big.
Okay.
And they never run a funded budget, so they never get in as much as they get out. And the current entities, especially Joburg Power, is costing Joburg billions. Those entities were supposed to have efficiency gains and ensure really top-class people on those boards in the key positions to deliver the services without all the red tape of government. Well, they've done the exact opposite. Most of them, not all, but many of them are draining the coffers of the city, most especially City Power. Then you've got this huge problem of Joburg having become an employment agency for the ANC. It's vast numbers of people employed. Somebody told me the other day, I don't know if this is true, so I do have to check it. So I want to just say check alert, but somebody told me there are 500 people in the mayor's office. Now, I don't know how that works, because when I was the mayor of Cape Town, I had 10 people in my office. A lawyer, a registry clerk who dealt with the correspondence, a diary manager, because a diary for a mayor is very complex, and one or two other things. And the most important person was the lady who made my tea every day, because she really looked after me and cared for me. But we didn't have any more than that. Mm. So I don't know how you expand your office to that scale.
You know what scares me is you or anyone else who comes and sits here and puts up their hand for a mayorship, whether it is, and we've had mayors of Pretoria, of Tshwane, in and out here. And they all have the best intentions. They understand the mandate. They understand the trouble that it's in. But then they just get replaced way before. Because I'm imagining that to turn Johannesburg around, if you now presume that it needs turning around, it's not going to take...
No, it's a long-term project.
A year or two. It must take how many years?
Yeah. Well, it took 30 years to break Joburg, because it's a strong, resilient city. And many parts of Joburg are not broken. I mean, the path that you're in now is the very opposite of broken. I can't believe the development and everything that's happening here. So there are beautiful, wonderful parts of Joburg. What is broken is the Joburg City Council's capacity to deliver the services they have to deliver. And that is a major, major problem. I mean, I was in Selby recently, where there were a whole lot of factories that haven't had water for 10 weeks.
Realistically speaking, how long do you think it will take to bring it back on a better path? The service delivery, that will obviously then include safety and security that we spoke about earlier. Realistically, how many years?
Well, realistically, if you're talking safety and security, Joburg's got no substantial powers to deal with that. The municipal police or the metro police can only do bylaw enforcement, traffic policing, and crime prevention, which is just basically visible policing, walking up and down. But they haven't got any investigative powers, and you cannot really bring criminals to book unless you can investigate and unless you can prepare dockets for court that are trial ready and unless you can secure convictions. And that is what the Metro Police can't do. That's why we're having a big fight with the new, well, all the ministers of police, you know, from Natin Tetwa right the way through to currently Kachalia, Professor Kachalia. And we're saying to them, decentralize the police. You can do it. You have the power to do it. Cape Town's got the capacity to do it. They've got an absolutely excellent Metro Police force. And they're already doing investigations because the police has lost the capacity. The South African Police Service has lost the capacity to do that. So the Cape Town Metro Police steps in. I'll be trying to do the same in Johannesburg. And JP Smith, who is one of the best MACO members you'll ever find, who prevented Seapoint from becoming Hillbrow by the Sea, who's built up the best metro police force that you can imagine. I'm trying to persuade him to come and join me in Johannesburg, because what he doesn't know...
And you
know,
are importing Cape Townians.
No, well, I don't, not many. But I promise you, if you can find me a person that is better than him in Joburg, so I won't import him.
So it's doable, if you had to say a number of years.
Okay, well, it depends what you're talking about.
You've been Premier of the Western Cape, you were Mayor of Cape Town, you've been in politics for longer than some of us have been alive.
60 years next year.
So I'm asking you for an educated... Not an educated guess. What would you say?
Well, I'm going to give five commitments. I haven't made them public yet, but I'll give you some broad idea. Our number one focus is going to be water.
Yeah.
Because you can't live without water. It's just very simple. It's the number one priority. Also, the electricity reticulation system. A lot of investment needed there and to stop the corruption. The third thing is everything to do with roads. Filling potholes, fixing streetlights, fixing the verges, making sure the traffic lights work, everything to do with roads. Then what we're going to look at is bylaw enforcement and public spaces. You can't have public spaces being taken over by drug addicts and petty criminals, which means the rest of the public can't use those spaces. Mm-hmm. So that is a very, very serious problem. And then the other thing is our small CBDs, which should be thriving hubs of job creation and business, now being very, very run down. So I would like to make sure that those are turned around. So those are the five things we will be particularly looking at most carefully. At the same time, we'll be doing a lot of other things. So while I cannot fix the South African Police Service because it is not a local government mandate, it's a national government mandate, but nevertheless, we can work very hard to fix the Metro Police, which we will be doing.
I've lied to our listeners.
No.
I said I promise I'll get your questions
you
in, and I haven't.
Yeah. Yeah. No, so you've got to get some. Come, otherwise I'll have to give you the Anelis treatment.
We were doing so well.
Until now.
hang on, babe. listen, Ellen, would you mind? Tit for tat. Listen, would you mind hanging until after the news?
I'll definitely do that.
Thank you very much.
Absolutely, you don't want the Anelli treatment.
Coming up just after the news, questions from you. I see they are lined up. And also, we're going to play a little game, a little tester game for all of us. How well do we know our city, our beautiful, amazing, important city of Johannesburg? Hanging with Helen Ziller on the show this morning. Thank you again for stopping by. Questions from you on 084 850 0942. Let's start here.
I'm 66 years old. Why is it that I'm forced to go on pension at 65 by SA laws made by politicians, yet three quarters of our politicians are over 65 and don't follow the same rules they enforce on us citizens and keep working past 65 with no repercussions? It just seems different laws for politicians than what it is for us as citizens.
Fair enough.
Can I answer? Mm. Yeah, that's a very, very good question. People are living healthier, longer in many instances. Their brains are functioning fine. Why should their experience be lost to the economy and society? And I would not have known what to do with myself if I had to retire at 65. But most of these are institutional policies inside institutions. They make those decisions. Now, I'm not sure if there is an act requiring university staff to retire at 65. Because my husband was a professor at the University of Cape Town and he was forced to retire at 65. Mm. But then he went on contract with another university for a very long time and only actually retired at the beginning of this year when he turned 82. So he worked for many, many years since that, but on contract. Now, this is crazy to me and I really don't believe in ageism. That's why some of our mayors have been in their 20s because they're excellent and capable to do the job in their 20s. And here I am at 74 years old being the DA's mayoral candidate for Johannesburg. It's not my age they worry about. It's my capacity to do the job that they're worried about. And that should be the only thing that counts in retirement age in my book. So I completely agree with a caller. I think it is ridiculous. And I will find out if the forced retirement age at universities is mandated by law or if it is just an institutional policy. But I think in many companies, it's an institutional policy. There's no law that says you have to retire at 65.
One thing I've learned about ageism and politics is that it's bad for you unless you can use it to your advantage, the way that Donald Trump, of course, used it to his advantage with Joe Biden, because he started calling him Sleepy Joe.
Yes.
And going on about his age. And he also is not, you know, he's not a young man anymore.
Well, he's older than Joe Biden.
Yeah.
But the truth is, yeah.
Well, than Joe Biden was.
But, that's the whole point. I mean, Joe Biden was sleepy and he was confused. And that's the criterion on which you must measure people. If you are sleepy and you are confused, then you shouldn't be running for president. I'm sorry, I don't agree with Donald Trump on much, but that you couldn't have Joe Biden in a second term, it was quite clear to me. He was getting confused in debates. He was going completely off script in his speeches. He spoke gobbledygook. He had no sense of direction often. Not always, but you could see the effects of age hitting him more and more frequently in public contexts. And that is a very big problem. The risk of not having a mandatory retirement age is that people feel sorry for you. And you say, well, I'd just like to continue a year. And then you become a passenger on a train. And there's no space for passengers in South Africa. Everybody has to earn their living and do a full job every day, because that's what makes the economy grow. And that's what makes more job opportunities become available. So there can't be passengers. And the big risk in South Africa, everyone has this Ubuntu feeling, well, I'm sorry for this one, I'm sorry for that one. She's got four grandchildren to support and her children are drug addicts and don't do it, so let's keep her on. You can't function an economy that way. It's got to be who's adding value and who's adding sufficient value. That is the criterion. And you can be in your 20s and you can be in your 70s. And that's the only criterion. Not how many times you've been around the sun.
Next one.
Just want to find out what's going to be different. What changes will there be in Johannesburg if you are the mayor?
We've touched on quite a number of those points, yes, yeah. I feel. Is there something you haven't mentioned yet that's on your radar?
Well, we will do a lot of things. We will get to the bottom of corrupt syndicates. We will ensure that there is a forensic auditor in the mayor's office to go after them and to protect whistleblowers. We will make sure that we have a facilitation unit for public-private partnerships, because those partnerships really deliver the best results for the city. And we will make sure that we have a whole-of-society approach, working together with the wonderful civil society organizations that are all over Joburg, because they love Joburg so much, trying to fix the problems. Those are some of the things we will do completely differently.
Okay, last question quickly coming in.
I've got a strange question. I want to know, how are you going to deal with sabotage?
Well, sabotage is a big word, because sabotage, when I hear about sabotage, I think of people blowing up electricity substations and doing all that kind of thing. But if you're talking about it in a more constrained sense, that is people trying to undermine me, people having malicious compliance, not doing the work, etc., you can put strict performance criteria in place and measure them regularly. But the worst kind of sabotage we have is the sabotage of stealing and destroying our infrastructure. It is horrific when I see how much infrastructure has been deliberately damaged by vandals in Johannesburg. And I know why they're doing it. They're stripping everything they can find of steel and anything that has a resale value, and going to these scrap shops everywhere, these illegal pop-up scrap shops, and getting money and buying drugs and alcohol. That is the reason for it. I was at a bridge the other day in Joburg, which is about to fall down. And it was beautifully designed. It's an old bridge, and it's got manholes in the bridge where technicians can go into the inside of the bridge and fix things. And now they've been taken over by drug addicts who use those manholes as places to actually live. And they've stripped that bridge of its internal scaffolding, if you will, completely, and it's about to fall down. Now, breaking things that shouldn't be broken is, to my mind, sabotage. And if we keep on having to fix things that were broken by vandals, we are never, ever going to get onto the new stuff that we have to do. Mm-hmm. The great thing about Cape Town, although they also have some vandalism, but the great thing about Cape Town is that you can plan for 2050 and budget for 2050, sitting here in 2025. But in Joburg, we've got to go back to 2000 and start fixing all the stuff that should never have been broken in the first place. And the big contributor to that, or a very big contributor to that, is vandalism. And I class that as sabotage.
You spoke about Cape Town as they, like you're home already.
Yeah.
I like that. Okay, coming up. It's the fun part.
Yes.
We're gonna have a little quiz on Johannesburg. It's for all of us to see how well we know Johannesburg. And we've had a machine make you a song.
Ooh.
Yes.
Is this an AI song?
Yes.
This is so cool.
Have you ever had a song about you?
No, I've had a lot of rude lyrics about me, but let's listen to this one to see how rude it is.
Have you ever had an artificially intelligent song
No. I mean, I've got a very musical son who can also make music on the computer. I have no idea how he does it, but yeah.
Maybe he'll even appreciate it. That's all coming up next, just after Felicity's traffic.
Breakfast with Martin Bester.
Martin Bester arranged my meetings around his show. I just enjoy his vibe.
Jacaranda FM.